From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Acting U.S. Ambassador of Ukraine William Taylor's testimony to House committees conducting the impeachment inquiry into President Trump was so damning that lawmakers emerged from the closed-door hearing saying they were stunned. Taylor confirmed the account by the original whistleblower who complained about Trump's attempt to arrange for a quid pro quo with Ukraine, holding back military aid in exchange for political dirt on his rivals. But unlike the unnamed CIA officer, Mr. Taylor is a seasoned and veteran retired diplomat respected by both parties and over whom Trump has no leverage. Will his testimony be the smoking gun that breaks the dam of Republican support for Trump? We go now to Washington, D.C. to speak with Mitch Jezrich, veteran Pacifica reporter, host of Letters and Politics, heard on KPFA and KPFK. He is in D.C. covering the impeachment inquiry. He happens to be one of my favorite journalists. Welcome to the program, Mitch.
It is my very good pleasure to be on your program, Sonali.
So you are all the way in D.C., you're ordinarily based in Oakland. This impeachment inquiry is something that's unfolding quite rapidly. Let's first talk about Bill Taylor's testimony before we get to some of the things that have happened after that. Because, of course, these are closed-door testimonies, all we get are the opening statements, the opening remarks that are written and then shared with the press, or the press obtains them. So that's all we really know, plus what those who are inside the testimony then share, sometimes anonymously with the press. From what you can tell, was this a smoking gun?
It's pretty damning, Sonali. I mean, William Taylor basically is one of the three people that were a part of those text messages that we were all reading just a few weeks ago between himself and Kurt Volker, as well as Gordon Sondland, and trying to get a meeting between Ukrainian President Zelensky and Donald Trump. Those were the text messages in which William Taylor said, "Hey, wait a minute, is this a quid pro quo? This is crazy." And then Volker responded to him, "No, you're misreading the president's intention. Let's stop text messaging now." And so that's what we got before. That's who Taylor is, who was raising alarm through those text messages. So his testimony on Tuesday filled in more of the blanks of what happened outside of those text messages, what happened with individual conversations in trying to create this meeting. And these are just the accounts of William Taylor. So Republicans are trying to say, well, that's the account. They're not denying what William Taylor said, but he didn't provide any proof that that's exactly what happened. So in a smoking gun in that sense, not at least for the Republicans, but for the Democrats, certainly. And what William Taylor also said was that not only was a meeting with Trump, with Zelensky, dependent on, and also to get the military aid of $391 million to Ukraine, not only was that all predicated on Zelensky agreeing to move forward with an investigation in both the Bidens, as well as in this theory that Ukraine was involved in the theft of the DNC emails in 2016. But he said that they were saying the entire relationship with Ukraine was on the line if Ukraine was not going to move forward with doing these investigations, which is very serious because we talk about Ukraine a lot. And I think we forget sometimes to add that Ukraine has been in this kind of quasi-civil war, which the United States has been very much a part of, as has Russia has been a part of it. And to say to the government that the United States has been supporting that our entire relationship with you is dependent on you doing these investigations into the Bidens and into the DNC emails is pretty significant and pretty damning.
Now, just days before Taylor's testimony, top-ranking Republican Senator Lindsey Graham was asked if he would support the impeachment process. And he said that if you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing. Some have said, well, Mr. Graham, here is a very, very credible testimony that shows a clear quid pro quo. But of course, Graham has continued to support Trump, even going as far as supporting Trump's use of the word lynching to describe what has happened to him. Graham said, this is a lynching in every sense, which is just quite a remarkable statement to make, because in every sense implies in a literal sense as well. So Lindsey Graham seems as though nothing Trump could do would convince him.
Yeah, not at this point. And apparently Lindsey Graham is also going to be pushing for a vote on a resolution in the Senate condemning the House of Representatives and this process that is occurring right now with these impeachment inquiries and the process of getting all of these depositions from a lot of people within government, including the State Department. I mean, they're going to, again, we're talking about, is this a smoking gun? What this is William Taylor's account of what happened, right? So it's not a recording, it's not taped, it's not in writing. It's just his account of what happened. And so the Republicans are trying to hurt his reputation a little bit. And by calling him career diplomats who are part of the Never Trump campaign. And William Taylor is a career diplomat. He is part of the service of, you know, the Foreign Service, many of who have been testifying concerning Ukraine in these depositions, who have been there for many years under different administrations. And so the Republicans are trying to paint these as careerist, you know, the bureaucrats who were always against Trump from the beginning.
Now, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, who is also part of the always Trump camp, let's call them that, alongside Lindsey Graham, has had it recently a closed-door meeting with fellow Republicans to strategize about how to respond to the impeachment inquiry. And it seems as though their only issue that they can really latch onto is the process. And so we heard reports that he wants Republicans to focus on the process rather than the content of the inquiry, because the content of the inquiry is so damning that there's really no defense for it. So let's talk about that process. How are Democrats holding this inquiry, and how does it, in terms of how it compares to previous impeachments? And we don't have that many examples to go by, but we do have a couple.
Okay, so Mitch McConnell is an interesting case in point. On Tuesday, he held a press conference in which reporters repeatedly asked him about the contents of the deposition that we learned concerning William Taylor. And he would not answer those questions. Instead, he would pivot to talking about the secretive nature so far of this process, of the closed nature of this process so far, with depositions being done behind closed door in which the public doesn't have access, and which even other congressional members who aren't on these committees have access. So that's what he pivots to. And even as he was pivoting to that, reporters would follow up and say, no, we're not asking you about the process here. We are asking you to talk about what William Taylor said. And instead, he would just go right back to the process, which was very telling, because as you said, right now, concerning all the things that are coming out of these depositions, even before William Taylor, but especially with William Taylor, it's very hard on Capitol Hill right now to defend the behavior of Donald Trump. And so what they're doing is they're going hard and talking about the process. Now, Sonali, something very important happened concerning the process on Wednesday morning. These three committees, the House Intelligence Committee, the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and the House Oversight Committee, these are the three committees that are involved in the depositions. And all members, Democrats and Republicans, are participating in it, and so are their lawyers, and so are their staff that have special clearance to be able to participate in this process. Laura Cooper of the Pentagon was supposed to come in and give her deposition. And they wanted to talk to her about what she knew from the Pentagon's point of view about withholding the $391 million in military aid to Ukraine. Well, just before that hearing began, about 40 Republican representatives marched down outside of what we call the SCIF room. That's where these depositions are happening. And it is a room that is super secure. I'm not even allowed to point my microphone in its direction when the hearings are happening, even though I could never pick anything up in there anyways from where they have us sit. And those Republicans came down, held an impromptu press conference, and then marched into the room where the deposition was to occur with Laura Cooper. They weren't supposed to be in there. They started chanting why they were in there, don't keep us out, to the point where it actually stopped the deposition altogether. Adam Schiff, who is the chair of this whole process, stood up, walked out, and brought Laura Cooper with him. These Republicans stayed in the room for hours and hence shut it down. We're conducting civil disobedience and stopping this whole deposition that was supposed to happen on Wednesday from even happening. And as I'm talking to you, it's still unclear if this deposition's going to happen on Wednesday. But for at least 6-7 hours, they've been able to delay it. And it's possible, don't know the very latest as we're talking to you. This is a developing story, but it's very possible that it's not going to happen on Wednesday at all.
Hmm. And of course, you mentioned most of these Republicans who conducted this bizarre act of civil disobedience were not even members of the committees that are participating or, you know, whose purview this inquiry is. I want to turn back to Mitch McConnell and what we were saying earlier about how he's kept shifting to the process. There was one moment where reporters basically caught him in a contradiction with President Trump. Trump, a few weeks ago, in early October, had claimed that he had had a phone call with McConnell about the rough transcript of his call with Zelensky, and that McConnell had said that it was, quote, the most innocent phone call that I've ever read. When McConnell was asked about that phone call by a reporter, he denied that conversation ever having taken place. The reporter said, does that mean that Trump was lying? He said, I don't know, but that phone call didn't happen. And I'm wondering, is that a hint of anything? Or is this, you know, just a slip up?
It shows that Mitch McConnell doesn't really want to be involved in the whole Ukrainian situation and wants to avoid talking about it at all. And it's interesting, Sonali, you mentioned earlier that McConnell will be a consistent supporter of Donald Trump. And so far, that is very much true. But I will say this, as somebody, and I have covered Mitch McConnell for a very long time. In the previous decade, when he was still a senator, I was covering him on a daily basis because he was a part of the Republican leadership then. Wasn't the majority leader, but part of the leadership. And I will tell you this, and I don't have facts, I don't have a smoking gun to say that the Republicans are going to turn, and I'm not saying this is actually even likely going to happen. But I do think it's within the realm of possibilities, even a remote possibility, that the Republicans at some point will say to themselves, especially in the Senate, I don't think the support that Donald Trump receives from Republicans on Congress is as sincere in the Senate as it may be in the House of Representatives. You know, senators represent an entire state. That usually makes them a little more moderate, or it's almost like a governor, right? When you think about it, it's a statewide election. Whereas in the House, he has, you know, very fervent supporters. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that at some point the Republicans in the Senate would say, you know what, this is going too far. This isn't working for us. Let's just cut the cord, get rid of him, and bring on Mike Pence as the president and deal with the losses afterwards. I'm not saying that's a probability, but knowing and covering Mitch McConnell as long as I have, I don't think in his heart he's actually a Donald Trump supporter. But Mitch McConnell is a cold, calculating politician. And he has understood that for him to have as much influence and power as he has will require him to play ball so far with Donald Trump up to this point.
Right. He has gotten to confirm the nominations of two Supreme Court justices under Trump and of course, obtain other concessions as well. I want to pivot to the Democrats. Now, they were hoping for a quick inquiry after the whole Ukraine call transcript was released, and they realized, all right, this is something that they can politically take advantage of. But now it's looking as though they might have to slow down and they might have to resort to public hearings. What do you know about their strategy and the conversations happening on Capitol Hill about closed door versus public hearings?
Yeah, this is a really big issue. And I think, first off, I am sympathetic with the Republicans' complaint about this entire process so far being done behind closed doors. But I think you were right, Sonali, to point out, are they really upset about the process? Are they also just not wanting to talk about what Trump is doing? And I do think it's also a convenient way for them to talk about all this without getting into the whole Ukraine situation.
So the secretiveness of the Democrats is giving the Republicans fodder to be upset about the process.
And that's very true. So here's what Democrats will tell you that's happening with so far this behind closed process that we are seeing that's not open to the public. They don't see the work of these three committees that are getting depositions as hearings at all, not congressional hearings. They see themselves doing the work that a special prosecutor would do. But right now, there is not a special prosecutor, and Robert Mueller had already finished his work before this phone call with Zelensky and Trump even occurred. So the Democrats see themselves actually doing the investigation that a special prosecutor would have otherwise done. And so in that process, they're saying, these can't be open hearings, these can't be open depositions, because in depositions, they're never open because you don't want witnesses to know what other witnesses are saying, because you don't want to leave open the opportunity for witnesses to conform their testimony to each other, to come up with a single narrative that they're telling the investigators. Hence, it's important that the witnesses, that when you hear from these witnesses, that it is done in private. And then they say, once they're done with all of these depositions, what will happen is something will become public, but it's not clear what will become public. Will the transcripts of these depositions be made public? Will partial transcripts of these depositions made public with a lot of things that are redacted? Will there be hearings from these committees that are holding the depositions that public? I mean, will we see William Taylor come back for an open hearing? None of that is clear right now, if any of that or how any of that's going to happen or how it's going to happen. You can rest assured something's going to come up. Something's going to be made public. But exactly how much, we don't know. And so once the deposition process is over, then what will happen is it will be referred to the House Judiciary Committee, and then the House Judiciary Committee will be tasked with coming up with articles of impeachment. That process, once it gets to the House Judiciary Committee, will probably be much more of an open process. But as far as how do we know this story concerning Ukraine, it's still to be seen how much we're actually how much of it's actually going to go public.
So poll after poll has continued to show support for impeachment holding strong. Some are even showing a slight increase. And with Democrats holding the House, a strong majority in the House, what is stopping Pelosi from simply holding a vote and winning it tomorrow? She likely would win it, or am I wrong there? Or do you think that they're stalling to give Republicans in the Senate more time to decide whether to vote to remove Trump from office?
Yeah, you know, I don't think there is anyone on Capitol Hill, from where I'm joining you right now, Sonali, who thinks that Donald Trump won't be impeached. Right. Everyone does believe.
And just to clarify for audience, the word impeached doesn't mean removed from office. It's like an indictment. When the House votes to impeach, it means that person has been impeached. Then the Senate votes and needs a two-thirds majority at a trial presided over by the Chief Justice to remove that impeached president from office. So, yeah.
That's exactly right. And so I think Nancy Pelosi is trying to, and we see Republicans uncomfortable with the actual issue of what this is all about, trying to get Ukraine and sort of putting your whole relationship at stake with Ukraine over getting an investigation into the Bidens, into a potential political opponent for the presidency. But I think Nancy Pelosi, and I think the Democratic leadership in this whole process that's happening in the House, I think they're trying to make the strongest case possible for impeachment. So to make it difficult as possible on Republicans to defend Donald Trump and to vote when it goes to the Senate, not to convict, and make a case as strong as possible to see if you can, you know, Sonali, this whole story has taken a life of its own in the last few weeks alone. It's hard to know at this point where it ends. There are possibilities now that I think a lot of people didn't think were possible just a few weeks ago. And so I think the Democrats are trying to make the best case, the strongest case they can, that what Trump did was an impeachable offense and that it would be negligent to let him off the hook, hence putting the Republicans in a very tough situation.
Finally, I don't know if you've heard of this organization, but there's been this outside group called Republicans for the Rule of Law that have been putting out ads trying to urge a Republican revolt against Trump. And recently there was an op-ed by the executive director urging Mitt Romney to wrest the Republican Party out of Trump's hands and lead a movement in the Senate to impeach Trump. Romney is one of the few outspoken critics who has not announced his retirement or, you know, just essentially said that he won't run again. And I'm wondering whether that is a slim possibility.
I think so. I mean, I think it goes back to what I was saying before. At this moment of time, likely not to happen. But I think it's within the realm of possibilities. Again, as I said earlier, even a remote possibility, not saying it's likely, but a remote possibility that this thing just steamrolls and avalanches to a point where Republicans could potentially leave Trump. I don't think it's out of the question. It's not probable, but I don't think it's completely out of the question either.
We didn't even get to talk about Rudy Giuliani and his associates Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, and I'm not sure how much the Democrats are focusing on that. And also Bill Barr, the Attorney General, William Barr. Any last thoughts on any of those figures?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Rudy Giuliani, and this is what Taylor testified on Tuesday, William Taylor, as there was two tracks of foreign policy dealing with Ukraine, one that went through the traditional avenues and one that went through Rudy Giuliani. And it appears that Rudy Giuliani is the one who is behind that we can see pushing hardest to ensure that Ukraine would do the investigation into the Bidens and into the hacking of the DNC email server. You know, I guess when you talk about smoking gun, which you were bringing up earlier, Sonali, it seems to me that right now we could trace this all to Rudy Giuliani. When can we trace it? How do we find the ultimate smoking gun? You can suspect Trump was ordering this, but that, I guess, would be the ultimate smoking gun, is where we could see some evidence of where Donald Trump ordered the investigation and ordered the holding up of the money to Ukraine. For the investigation.
And of course, if the tables were turned and all of this was happening with a Democratic president, you know, Republicans and probably even Democrats wouldn't need a smoking gun. All of the circumstantial evidence gathered so far would have been enough. But of course, Republicans fight dirty, as we have seen. Mitch, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck out there.
It was my pleasure, Sonali. Thank you.
Mitch Jezrich is a veteran Pacifica reporter, host of Letters and Politics, heard on KPFA and KPFK. And he's currently in Washington, D.C., where he's speaking to us from covering the impeachment inquiry. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.